Didn't get the confirm from Rutto, but I'm going to assume because the song's over that we're back. And
you assume correctly, my friend. Welcome back, everybody.
Usually when I assume, I make an asset of you and me, but not this time. And what is the verdict, Eternal? We got Edward staying for a little bit. Is that the case?
Guilty as charged, I believe.
Yeah, I'm here.
Guilty as charged.
Awesome.
We failed to nullify for you, Eternal. You're going to federal pound me in the ass camp.
Oh boy, I'm going to the big house.
And as you might have gleaned already, Eternal, Edward, the other one that starts with an E. We are pretty informal usually, but we get a little more so in the postcast. But when we have a good, lively discussion, we like to keep it going because, well, why the hell not? We got smart minds from around the world on the internet. Better keep talking. What were the Eternal, I don't know if you want to go straight into those, but Aniran in the chat, he's one of our very well-read producers, wanted to bring up a couple kind of more economic-related points that we weren't able to make into the kind of the primer, the basic stuff in the beginning. And he has a kind of a love. He's kind of secretly but overtly in love with Brian Kaplan, an economist, which I don't blame him for. I've heard some of his stuff. It's good too. But and he's saying in the producer chat that he lives with his literally fascist oppressive parents. is that why you're not on, Aniran? They won't let you have a mic. Aniran is actually a genius, so it's too bad. But the point,
he's like five or something. Like, he's the baby of the group.
Yeah,
but he went toe to toe with Kinsella the other day.
Okay, yeah, this is a story that you need to hear, Edward. He is. You know, we create a podcast, we go on, we do like the circuit, we talk to the different libertarians, other people of interest, you know, anybody who's kind of willing and interesting and wanting to, you know, and tolerant of us enough to come on. And we finally, the one episode, the one show where we finally, like, ostensibly kind of get put on the map, people are like, oh, these aren't just people who are like, we're just, you know, kind of pitying them, stopping by, like, there are actually some smart people in that Reddit community. That was actually a fun conversation. And there was a little trinket that our producer, Aniran, left for one of them. He said, I actually, you know, I know you had fun and that was good, but he posted on our site, like, I kind of disagree with a couple things. I didn't get to chat with you. And he took the time on his own site to respond. And then Aniran responded in turn. He was, you know, very respectful. And it seemed like he shut him down. And this is someone who's a prominent person who's, you know, spoken at Mises Institute. He's
by prominent, I think you mean fucking asshole.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I usually mean by that. And Aniran is, who's a teenager, writing that, was like, you know what? Not so much. And he didn't have a retort for it. And it's like, okay, that was kind of cool.
Not a fan of Kinsella?
He's just like, yeah, I mean, I have not directly interacted with him that much, a little bit actually, but not extensively. But I know him by his words, you know. I read his stuff, and he is just the most obnoxious sort of guy.
No, he's not. I'll tell you, the most obnoxious guy is Robert Wenzel. Oh, I said it. I dropped the Wenzel bomb.
Don't say that about Robert Wenzel, man. You know he's going to destroy you. He's going to destroy you!
One of the things that's funny is if you Google Georgism, I think, like, Kinsella is the third link or something. It's EGADS, I hate Georgism. That's the title.
Yeah, he really doesn't like that.
So, yeah,
but I'm glad because, you know, I wouldn't want him on my team. I'm glad he's on yours, I guess. No.
I don't know. We don't really have teams here. We're all just kind
of
like...
I'm just kidding. I've we have a lot of anarcho-capitalists on our message boards, and I'm really good friends. So, you know, I feel like we're on the same team, really.
Dude, we don't have teams, man. Just smoke weed every day, bro.
Every day.
Yo, so LDL, you had some stuff you were trying to get in before I completely butted in and threw you off the cliff and said, you're my cliff. So, yeah, just go ahead and ask your stuff now, because I really want to hear what you're gonna go with that.
Well, I was just saying pretty much things that doesn't get talked about, or, well, I guess is talked about, but usually from a status perspective, I guess you could say, is that really in communities, there is a positive externality that. And I think in some ways is there's some really good Georgist type arguments in terms of why that does offer you are getting a benefit by virtue of this location. Now, the thing is when people try and take that and say, oh, well, this only is happening because you're in the United States. I mean, that just doesn't really follow because even places across the state, you know, go live in Detroit versus Grand Rapids. I mean, Jiminy Christmas, that's obviously very, very different just based on the very close community that you have, I guess.
It's obvious that most of the positive externalities are privately created, although I think a good Georgist sort of entry argument is from the public side, simply because it's the most egregiously obvious. All right, so for instance, what they say is, suppose they build a subway line, and, you know, there's a bunch of stops along the subway line, and a radius around each stop raises the land values by, you know, maybe $100,000 or $200,000 a plot. And that value is completely just unearned. And in fact, a lot of that is crony sometimes. But the subway line itself, who is it paid for by? It's paid for by the riders or from general tax revenues. Essentially, people who aren't directly benefited necessarily. Whereas, you know, a natural and easy way to fund that would just be to say, hey, the rising land value is that's going to be paying for it. You know, even they did a study in London, like only 6% LVT would fully fund the subway line they had put in over there called the Jubilee line. And it's ridiculous that it has to come out of general revenue.
LDL, your response. You have 20 seconds.
I don't know that I have a response. Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree.
You
yeah,
lose the debate.
I think it tends to get dangerous when you start about things that are funded via taxation. I mean, you started talking about a particular rail maybe being built by public funds, and a little more dangerous when you start looking at it through that perspective, just because it goes, well, now you've taken away from the people in the community, you've been back to the community, and the original owner now is the people in the community. It starts to form this weird cycle that becomes hard to tweeze.
Yeah, I personally am not a big fan of public works or anything like that. There's the citizens' dividend argument appeals to me a lot more. You just sort of treat everyone as if they're members of a big land trust or a big corporation, and they're all shareholders. Give them a dividend.
That'd be better than what's going on here. I'm in California. I read of you here. You know, there's gonna be lightning fast rail between San Francisco and LA, and I can't find a single person IRL besides Rutto who will be like, yeah, that's probably not going to work, and I don't think that that's money well spent, and et cetera, et cetera.
We just need Elon Musk to give us his hyperspeed rail.
Oh yeah, that guy's, is he holding out on us, or he's just been spending too much time on the electric cars?
He apparently said that he wants these all for creating bullet trains that I guess are evacuated tube or something like that.
Oh, so you don't have the wind resistance? The evacuated tube would be so amazing.
They said it would be like four times as fast as a current bullet train.
Yeah. I think I just evacuated my tube.
Oh man, that's what I came back to. I had my headphones off, and that's the first words I heard.
LDL is going to be able to sleep well tonight because he got that in during the cast. I earlier got the Obama phone reference in, which to Edward's credit, you picked up on that immediately. So we love you. That's one of my favorite references on Decline Estate. So I'm going to sleep well because of that one. It just, the sound bites is what we live for sometimes. I can't top evacuate too, but I want to speak to the, I want to speak to the science of it. There's Toast signing on. Yeah, I guess the only limitation when you have that, God, I can't get that image out of my head. The evacuated tube is just the inertial change. I mean, you can go pretty much as fast as whatever without, you know, if the passengers don't feel the vibration, but just getting from speed zero to speed, you know, that fast takes a long time. And if you do it too fast, it's going to be an unpleasant ride. I mean, that's what I learned from an hour-long Discovery Channel.
I think they said you can, like, start it pretty easily. It's stopping. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah. Parachutes don't work without air. I don't know what you would do.
Yeah, I think all of those same issues are involved in space travel. And, you know, it seems to me like, you know, these things are just engineering problems, and I don't see any reason per se to rule it out. I mean, I guess I'm just very technophilic or whatever.
You're not Elon Musk, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a hero of mine, so like I think he's you know,
for the listeners, like, and for myself to have him, philic means attracted to, so you're on that team as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, it just seems to me obvious that, okay, there's a lot of things in history that people said couldn't be done, and then you do them, and then people just get their pants in a bundle about, you know, the implications, you know, but it's always, like, the same cycle, and things still get better pretty much. So, I mean, that's kind of my intuition. We could all die tomorrow because of a bioplague or something, but so far I seem to be
God, you're not going to sleep well tonight because you're worrying about bioplagues all the time, which are probably pretty likely. Edward, don't look at the producer chat right now. It's just nothing but distractions and or penis references, whatever you want to slice it.
Potato, potato.
What, well, is this, Xbox?
Because of the implication, that was my original post to Ancapistan. That was the best post I will ever do to that place. It's such a perfect analogy. Edward, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but the video link is them in the show It's Always Sunny referring to. No, bro, you're not getting it. It's not violent. It's not creepy. It's because of the implication. And because we have the one character who is a sociopath talking about, or a psychopath talking about taking girls out on a boat, it applies nicely to, at least in our minds, I guess, government enforcing rules and taxes.
Yeah, so I have a question. One of the first things you talked about in the main show was that a lot of people who claim to be altruistic in nature are in fact status seeking. My question is, do you ever piss neoliberals off by actually achieving altruism when in fact the neoliberals tend to fail at it consistently?
Good question.
Well, the thing about, the thing I would say about that is most people, if they're status seeking, just try to latch on to success and claim it as their own. So, you know, I think it's like the Gandhi three steps, right? First, they ignore you, then they criticize you, then they supported you all along. You know,
then profit. That's,
right. So that's pretty much, I think, how mainstream people react to the wild and crazy sorts of ideas that we like to talk about. You know, it's there's a lot of fuzzy lines in the kind of community I'm talking about. It's like, yes, I guess Eliezer Yudkowsky likes to call it, a section of person space, right? There's like he calls it like the technophile, libertarian, early adopter crowd, he called it. Like those people, I think, share a lot of fundamental assumptions and values, and we go against the grain a lot, very contrarian. And so maybe we have a lot of really bad ideas, but a lot of the good ideas that emerge tend to have been supported by us first. So in that sense, everything from the internet and whatever is quickly latched onto, right? Al Gore invented the internet, or, you know, whoever, and that's just how it works. They take credit.
Yeah, one of the things I see, I work in education, and one of the things I see, that's a field where, like, essentially every teacher is a liberal to some extent, neoliberal, I should explain. And a lot of them are really ineffective at what they do, and yet still claim to make a very significant impact in the world. And I've had individuals sort of become just livid with me when
we
I've explained ways.
We sacrifice so much for the good of the children.
Yeah, stuff like that.
I'd actually argue if you take the line that environment matters a lot, then you have to agree with them by definition. However, I as a biodeterminist almost have every reason to doubt what they're saying. In fact, I think it's pretty much bullshit that teachers really affect drastically the outcome of mature adults. I think what can happen is there's a lot of ways you can affect developmental progress, the pace at which they achieve the destination that their genes have determined for them within some margin of error. But pretty much I tend to think that like a lot of the stuff is way overblown, way useless. You know, if you think about like the most effective forms of education versus the least effective, I don't really see any correlation between the amount of dollars spent, for instance. So the people who say we need more money for the children, you know, really it's not for the children, it's for themselves, and they're just they're just hucksters. So
yeah, the children's just, you know, something to say that makes them look nice. Because if they said yeah, we need more money because frankly we are fucking tired of working 2 hours a day and then going home and working 2 more hours and we deserve to make more money, people would say fuck you and the chariot you rode on, bitch. But so, well, if they say something like, you know, but it's for the children, and people, gullible people, believe that, then of course, you know, it's all set for them.
Well, think about computers. Think about every awesome thing that ever happens, and how, you know, like, what, how does
internet porn,
how does the progress,
the chariot
go?
I rode in on.
Do things get more complicated, more expensive, and more unwieldy over time, or do they get cheaper, simpler, and better over time?
And internet porn.
And
it's all free.
The answer is obviously cheaper. Right.
In the world of computers, the only people who ask for money for the children are pederasts.
But the thing is, like, it almost seems like, if anything, like forcing them to work within a bigger, within a smaller budget would force them to use their noggin a little more, you know, because like the way you need to economize with a smaller budget, you know, you find creative and innovative solutions to problems. And those are the kinds of solutions that I think stand the test of time. And if
you use the sixth graders as desks for the third graders.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that I think my exposure in this field, let's say, of education is that so many of the institutions that society has created to accomplish this goal of education as they see it is really just a giant house of cards that is designed to protect their feelings, not actually achieve any particular outcome. So I just thought it was interesting that one of the first things you said was that a lot of people are status seeking.
Oh, absolutely. It's 100% the same when a politician says they're doing something for the children. They're doing it for their own status. I mean, or, you know, in general, like, think about what types of philanthropy rich people often engage in. Like, you'll have the Guggenheim Museum. They're really, like, donating philanthropy to fellow rich people, essentially. What they're doing is they're showing other rich people what nice things that they can provide for them and putting their name all over it. Or, like, you know, they are, you know, putting out, you know, big money to the Obama campaign, or, you know, but it's not... It's to show how trendy and hip they are to their friends that they can support a black candidate, or, you know,
iPhone.
These are the kind of stupid, you know, like self, masturbatory type of things that they engage in, and it doesn't help anything. And if you care about altruism, we need to, like, break free from all of these standard assumptions, and we need to almost reframe it as, why are you doing these things? Provide some ostracism going the other way, right? Because they have enough ostracism going in the direction of supporting all that stupid crap. So we need to provide a counterbalance. And the way that we try to do it is just, you know, get that more contrarian view out there.
I think it's important to strike the nice balance, though, between being contrarian and being very, I guess, kind of warm and open. There's a guy, are you familiar with him, Edward Penn Jillette from Penn and
Teller? Yeah, yeah.
I think he's, like, the greatest human that's ever walked the planet. Like, he's such a really, a friendly, warm teddy bear. and I will cuddle with him.
It's funny you use the word warm. I meant to bring it up, but I had forgotten. But there's a term that we use. You can actually Google this one. Eliezer Yudkowsky, I guess, is one of the bigger inspirations behind all this.
Eliezer, you know, fuck yeah.
If you know about Less Wrong Community, he kind of, you know, is the leader of the nerds, whatever. So he wrote a post on there. The title was Purchase Utils and Warm Fuzzies Separately. And what he meant by that is utils is like the unit of account for utilitarianism. So instead of dollars, you care about utils, the amount of good you're achieving in the world, standardized to whatever unit you feel.
Yeah, so it's like a placeholder they use in economics classes, yeah, too.
Exactly. It's a placeholder. And utils would be like a more, you know, it's hard to say objective, right? Because everything's subjective, but it's like it's a more appropriate basis for gauging your efficacy. Whereas if you're just gauging it by the warm fuzzies you feel, you're probably not going to be very effective. And however, he argues a little differently than the effective altruist, I guess, standard line would be, which he says that you should actually consciously engage in some of those warm fuzzies. Maybe you were hinting at that too. And what he meant is, but he said you should be very conscious of what you're doing. Like, you should always like question your own motives and realize that you're doing this a little bit for your own, self-indulgent purposes. And but if you need to get it out of your system, get that out of your system and donate the other 90 or 95% of your discretionary philanthropic money to better purposes.
So you can actually have like utils of noodles. That's like a real measurement.
Thanks. Thanks for that.
I just wanted to get that out there, because it was building up for the like last couple minutes, and I just thought it was important.
One thing I thought that was interesting also during the regular show that you mentioned was that of sort of developing a trust where you're putting your money into, and that is a contractual trust where that serves you. Okay, I regularly put a certain amount towards something, and by virtue of that, then I'm giving. And I thought that was a interesting balance, I guess, between this sort of notion that you must give, you must absolutely give, but that could kind of work more in a personal one-on-one level that doesn't lead into some of the necessary traps, I guess. I don't really know where I'm. It's just sort of a comment on something you said.
Well, I think I see a little bit what you mean. Like, if you're going to have a big brother, you can at least be your own big brother in a way. Like, you decide what's important to you, and you're going to be the one making sure that you live up to it and that you don't lose focus with your short-term bias, you know, or your time preferences at any given point.
I love when people summarize what I'm saying better than I say it.
Isn't that nice?
And then the other thing is with those trusts, what Brian says is you really like, if you want to make the most of that, what you do is you don't try to get an occupation where it seems like you're going to be doing so much good for the world. It's like, because that's just fooling yourself, because the whole point of a job is just like an exchange of goods and services. And economically speaking, if you in order to flatter yourself and your own warm fuzzies, try to get a job as, you know, a caretaker or guy trying to cure HIV, but in fact that's not your comparative advantage, all you're really doing is being inefficient. And what you should do, if you actually care about efficiency, is maybe if you're better, get a job at Wall Street and go take all that money and put it into one of those trusts. And then, you know, all of the major bucks you're getting there would be funneled into whatever awesome things you wanted to do. And the point with the Wall Street is, even if you think they're all a bunch of corrupt assholes, which you'd be right, the point is that, you know, it's not you as an individual actor on Wall Street wouldn't really be at fault. You'd be a player, and you have to always separate between being a player and, you know, the game itself.
Well, guys, I'm actually about ready to call it a night. So
yeah, I think we're kind of winding down.
Yeah, I just want to extend, you know, my gratefulness to you, Edward, for coming on and even hanging out with us for another 30 minutes in the after show. It's just been, it's been a great time, and I appreciate you spending the time with us.
Definitely, 100%. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, agreed. I kind of came in and Turtle said, hey, you know, through a friend, this could be fun. I didn't know what to expect. And then right, you know, like Toast was saying earlier, right when you started your initial rant, I was like, okay, good in my book, talking about people feigning altruism and feigning helping, but that's not really what they're about, and status seeking. I was like, all right, nestled into my chair. And again, this is Ron. I know, and I appreciate too, you were talking to a lot of different names tonight, especially with the after show. So thanks for the patience with that.
It was fun. There's right. Somebody here to take us out, I guess not.
So this has been the somewhat anticlimactic Decline to State after show for this Wednesday, May 8th, 2013, the year of our Lord. I think that's right. Hope you're enjoying some warm weather, whatever part of the world, or I guess if you're not upside down, you are. And yeah, again, tune in next week. Do we know what's on tap? I forget.
Brett Vinod? I don't know.
We're going to have to create some content. So if you're there, hopefully it's good. All right. Stay classy.
Bring your Obama phones.
Yes.
He just talked.
You know, everybody in Cleveland,
game.
No minority got one of them Obama phones.
Oh, no. A guest feeding into our circle jerk.
He's allowed to. That was good.
All right, guys. I hope you have a great night.